Okay, so Vera's in Portugal right now, and she is allegedly completely off the grid and offline. So this is our test. Hey, Vera, I'm in the studio. I'm in your studio, and I'm taking off my shoes right now.
You're a child.
She hates it when I take my shoes off in the studio.
I'm in Scarwood.
And I'm out of a job when she gets back. This is
Envoy Recorder Radio.
Anyway, Vera, you have job security. My God, we're a fifth as efficient without you here. Yeah, if anybody doesn't, if you're a leader of an organization and you don't have a chief of staff, go get one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a message. So I've been at Rogue Studios all week.
Oh, yeah.
You're just back from the greatest city in the world.
No, I'm back from London. And
did you break it?
Well, no, but Perry and I were there, and we realized that you people, or your people, however you want to take that, you stare. And I think there are like three, maybe four reasons that Perry and I might be stared at. One, we are wildly attractive. Two, we are wildly unattractive. Three, we look like gangly, bumbling idiots. And I know that one's not true, because while that might be true for me, Perry was with me and they were looking at both of us. Or for, we look mildly to wildly interesting, somewhere in between the two. I think those are the options. But what I will say is people just stared at us the whole time we were there.
This doesn't surprise me. I did see footage of the two of you roaming through Shoreditch, and there was a point at which there was one still that I saw of Perry standing in the street in Shoreditch, and I thought, if you two walk into a pub, particularly an East End pub, dressed as you were dressed, with the accents that you have and the height that you have, you may just be consumed by British women. I'm not even sure how, but that you'd almost like
literally
spontaneous human combustion, yeah, just done to you was my fear. I wasn't sure you're going to come back. Anyway, as we'll maybe chat about your trip in a minute, but
it was good.
As we are talking about the UK, involuntary sponsor of the week is Saltburn the movie, filmed in the UK, starring actors who are not from the UK, putting on toffee British accents. I think it was an Australian in the lead and an Irish.
Irishman, Barry Keoghan.
Yeah. Anyway, the film, you should see it because it is utter bollocks.
You finally watched
it. What an overrated piece of shit. I mean, this might illustrate that I've got a chip on my shoulder, but oh, it's a film about rich people doing toff stuff. Toff is slang for aristocratic.
No, yeah.
Inbred, overly rich. And the whole thing is presented as like, oh, it's a commentary on the relationship between upper class and working class. No, it's not. The working class kid is actually a spoiled upper middle class kid, just happens to live in a rich part of Liverpool, who's pretending to be a poor kid, the whole thing. And as for the bathtub scene, if that's like, I don't know how a gesture, I'll leave people to watch it, but I couldn't comprehend like diluting a gesture.
Well, here we go.
Common between gay men is somehow worse than anyway.
There you go.
Make your own chemical formulas around that. Anyway, involuntary sponsor of the week, Saltburn. Go see it, because if you want to understand what the British phrase bollocks means, you will understand it watching it.
There we go. You heard it here, like fourth. It's so late from that movie coming out. But Scott's arrived. Welcome to the zeitgeist. Hey, we've got a lot here, so let's pick and choose how we wade through this one. There's quite a bit. Anything like high on your list to talk about?
Well, the sponsor of the week was almost Harvard University, because it went through the agonizing process of deciding whether it was going to remove from a library. They took months and months of this. They confirmed that a book in their library, one of the books in their library, through scientific testing, they confirmed that the binding of the book was human skin. And so they went through several weeks and months to determine whether they should remove the book from the library, and they decided they would.
That's incredible.
It was
The word that I choose.
By the author of the book, I forget his name, I'm not sure he deserves credit to be mentioned on the ERR, took the skin from a woman who was mentally ill and passed away. And he bound the book.
How do I professionally say?
Do you know? You know, you try to find an upside in every story.
Don't. No.
It was when.
Don't have to.
She wasn't black.
Oh.
Do you, yeah, but you know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah. I was like, we probably.
Yep. I know. I was. Oh. And then I was uplifted. I was like, oh. Oh.
If you start real, it's just. Incremental.
Anyway, so okay. Harvard was only outdone because I happened to watch Saltburn.
All right. Hey, we are going to legalize adultery.
Yes, we are.
Or like decriminalize
in
adultery?
Only in New York.
Okay.
The state of New York has decided that it is going to actually make adultery legal. It is currently a felony offense to commit adultery in the state of New York, which I would just like to say to various people who are currently
No, leave it. So I mean, the criminalization of adultery, typically, like one, rarely enforced, and two, often only enforced around the woman, and like there's a gender dynamic here that adultery has been. Overwhelmingly used to put a woman's personal life on blast. And I think, I don't remember verbatim, but my recollection in reading some of this is it's still kind of front and center. But in reading this was basically the lawmaker who sponsored the bill said something to the effect of putting one's personal preferences... criminalizing one's personal preferences is wrong, and we shouldn't be doing that.
His argument. Any criminal law that penalizes intimate behavior between consenting adults does not deserve to be on the books, said Mr. Levine, who added that he's been happily married for 54 years.
I like that.
But to Perry's point earlier, when we were off camera, like when one has to protest. But I look. Hey, it hasn't been prosecuted. Get it off the books then, because it could be weaponized later. And I think that's a struggle with decriminalization, is that for as long as it lives on the books, it can be used. It's on the books. That said, I come from a country where we have lots of just non executed laws. I think it's still illegal for English men, specifically. I think this is English law, not British law. English men not to sharpen our arrows on the church steps on a Sunday morning. It's like one of those home defense things.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I think there's still a law on the books. We need like a legal scholar to fact check this. There's still a law on the books that like over a certain number of women living together is considered a brothel in Virginia.
Oh.
It's like some arbitrary number, 7 or 8. Somebody should check that. But yeah, just some of the laws that have remained and haven't been changed is pretty wild.
Yeah. All right. Coming on to good news. First successful pig kidney transplant took place early this week. In fact, it went so well that the patient was discharged after just 3 days. Richard Slayman, 62, first patient to successfully receive a kidney from a genetically modified pig. And he's doing great. And as some people may know, we're actually very close to the transplant community in the United States, actually internationally, and this is something called xenotransplant. It is the ability to use organs from non-Homo sapiens in Homo sapiens. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, the cost, particularly kidney transplant, the cost of dialysis and the pain of dialysis, the disruption of dialysis is enormous. And so, if we can find ways to increase the number of transplants, it has a real bottom line effect on people's lives and on healthcare costs as well.
Yeah. All right. So we've been talking a lot about social isolation, and I have a thing that I'm thinking about right now that I don't know, because we get to. People who work solo. Like, we often work in offices and like we have individual work that we do, but people who like don't have the environment in which they are working with others, I think about Amazon delivery drivers or FedEx, UPS drivers, mail carriers, cabbies. Like I've noticed this theme of them being on the phone. And I always wonder who they talk to. During the day, my mail carrier is just traipsing through neighborhoods and is always talking to somebody. And I want to know who's on the other end of the line. Like, is it just their, like, mom sitting, like, in her 90 in her living room talking to her son or daughter while they're carrying mail? Or is it just, like, another driver? Or is it, like, a mom at home with kid and, like, her husband talking to her while he's driving his truck? I think a lot about the loneliness of those people and how they stave that off. And is it, like, I find connection because I'm talking to somebody all day. Who's at home during the middle of the day to talk to?
So, you know, that explains CB radios with truck drivers, right? Lorry drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just on the CB the whole time, chuntering on to anybody who's within shortwave range. I think they still do that. I think CB is still a thing for truckers.
Yeah.
Because the point is, it's not just talking to somebody for truckers. It's, hey, I'm going to, you know, when three lanes come into two and sometimes a truck will block people from cutting in front with another truck.
Mm-hmm.
That's all happening on the radio.
Yeah.
And I want, like, yeah, but it, that's interesting. So you made me feel very guilty because you had a great experience with a London cab driver.
Yeah.
Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah. So Perry and I were hopping in one of the cool London
cabs. Black cabs?
Yeah. And for one, they turn on a dime. Like a guy like...
Yeah.
Because he was really good. He was on the phone the whole time, most of the time, because we ended up chatting when he got off. But he would like pause his conversation to tell us what he was doing. He's like, hey, I'm supposed to be taking a left here, but instead I'm going to take a right or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to hang a U-turn because you can't technically turn. But if I do... And so like he did that and like he just whipped this thing around on a dime. It was cool. And so the two drivers in the back were just appreciating how much he was...
Oh, the car guys.
Two petrol heads, as he called us. But Paul, the
hang on, before you get there, have you heard of the Knowledge? Do you know what the Knowledge
is? Not familiar.
Oh, it's wild. This is why British people get so angry in New York. So the Knowledge is in order
is
to
this
get,
a test?
Yeah. In order to get the medallion,
you
have to memorize the street map of London, like every street.
Yeah.
And so the test is you go in to get your medallion or you go in to get your certification. And somebody will say, okay, you're going from King's Cross Station to Heathrow. Describe street by street how you get there from memory. And remember, it's not a block grid. It's a Roman sort of origin city. They have to be able to memorize. And then they'll say, okay, there's traffic on Marylebone. Now how would you get there?
Yeah.
So they've got these memories. It's wild.
He was real cool because he was explaining it. He's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be veering off to the right here, but instead I'm going to go straight because that'll take us around. It's bogged down with traffic here. And so he was doing...
So when Brits land at JFK and they get a taxi and they go, take me to Sunset, taxi driver goes, where's that? You go, that's what the money's for. I'm not from here. It's your job.
You get me there. It's crazy.
Anyway,
so he hops off the phone and I'm like, hey, wildly enough, just can I ask you a question? Feel free to disregard. I was like, we're filming and talking about loneliness or working with a nonprofit and just kind of building out this body of tangible tools to combat loneliness. It's called the Social Connection Initiative. And I noticed you were on the phone. Like, are you on the phone often while you drive and maybe not engaging with your fares? And he's like, you know, you're absolutely right, and loneliness is a big driver, and like I'm lonely, and I think, and he went on this like diatribe about men of a certain age not expressing their feelings well, and that he might be the exception, and he's always happy to talk about it, but most men, as he's, I think was 55, 56, was saying like most men don't go there, have that conversation, express that they're lonely, and he's like, I have a wife, a kid, a house, a career, but also I have to find avenues by which to connect with people and do that intentionally, and most people don't. So I call my mates, and sometimes they don't answer, but I do that thoughtfully, and I'll call and check in with folks. And it's hard, and I wish we all did better with that. And so we exchanged contacts, and Paul sent me a long email talking about the, quote, L word, loneliness, as he called it. And he said, I suffer with loneliness, and maybe we were destined to meet. And then he outlined a bunch of things, but he said, big love to me and Perry. Take care, Paul. And we had a genuine moment about his loneliness and perception and reality and how we could probably do better to build connection across our communities, even with the cab driver taking us from King's Cross back to Shoreditch.
So you took a photograph of that note and you posted it to our encrypted chat space, yeah. And I read it, and you made me feel so guilty because we are working on this social isolation project, and it's really interesting and it matters a lot. But so I've spent a lot of time in London. I've spent a lot of time flying in and out of London, a lot of time in black cabs, and I have a bit of a chip on my shoulder towards Cockneys as a Northern lad. And so I may have been the person, and cab drivers are famous that they love to talk to their passengers, but they also love to moan a lot about whatever's going on. So I used to be the person who'd get in the cab and say, hey, you know, take me to Westminster or wherever. I'll give you a bigger tip if you don't talk. And then you are having this... And I might have said don't talk in a slightly more aggressive way.
If you shut the... Yeah.
And then here's you having these magical moments. I don't know why people were staring at you, Ace. I don't...
Yeah, well, there we go. There we go. Also, but before we move on, yeah. I want to know how they're so quiet on the phone. Like, if you've ever gotten in a cab and they're just kind of whispering, like, into the phone.
Because that's the whole of Europe. The Americans are so
loud. No, it happens
loud.
In New York, too. But it's always with somebody who's not from
not from the United States.
States.
Like, yeah. How many drivers in New York are Americans? Yeah, or were born in the United States.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you're all very loud.
But, like, what happens if, like, a customer wants to chat and you're on the phone? Do you hang up? Do your people on the other line just know that that's part of the job and, like, they're not talking to you?
I don't know. But I want to know the rules. In that industry, you just... Yeah, well, we can arrange for you to be a cab driver for I mean, that might be comedy gold.
Terrifying. But
yeah, to the volume at which Americans speak. So my kids will describe, we'll fly home, and as we land in the UK, they go, Dad's accent changes and he tells us to be quiet a lot. That's how we know we're in the UK. Stop yelling.
I was on an American train coming back down. So we went from London to D.C. We had a gig and then took the train home yesterday. And there was this five-year-old. He and his parents had been in New York. I forgot it was spring break, so the trains were packed. Yeah. And customs was a nightmare, too. But there was this five-year-old. He had to be four or five, and he was just loud as hell. I'm like, we're jet-lagged. We're not sure what time it is. And just knackered. And he would not shut up. And his parents wouldn't tell him to shut up. And he was precocious, and he had, like, a commentary on everything. And look, Uncle Ace loves the kids. He just like to hang out, tell me about your world. But, like, at some point, it feels like, can we do a little bit to recognize we're in business class? And there are people who, like, I don't know, are, like, working or trying to. And your kid is, I think I texted Perry and I said, if he says boing one more time as he jumps his stuffed bunny on top of everybody's head who's in his general vicinity, I don't often want to fight children, but I did.
Perry,
on my train home.
Just in the interest of his brand, will you just edit out the business class whining bit? Would be great. Hey, just before we wrap up on the UK, can we just celebrate for a second that it's the 10-year anniversary of same-sex marriages in the UK? And most Brits won't know it. An absolute non-event. Like, and it was controversial to get through. It has just become so normal, as I feel it has in large parts of the US.
Yeah.
But let's just celebrate that it was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, men marry men and women marry women. And
it just is.
It just was. Like, yeah. So it's. Yeah. I feel we don't celebrate nothing enough.
I love that.
That's a nothing to celebrate.
All right. What else?
Should we move on to... Tank Radio.
Let's do it.
Okay, so some heavy stuff this week in military civilian affairs. Everybody has probably read about World Food Kitchen and the seven people who were killed in. And let's be specific about this. It was not one engagement, but three distinct engagements. Three cars that were separated by a kilometer and a half. The Israeli Defense Force hit each of the cars with a different... It's thought it was a drone-fired missile. So four aid workers killed who were from... There's Canadian-American citizen, a Polish citizen, Australian... And I forget the nationality of the... how do I forget? Palestinian, because that's relevant. Mm-hmm. And then three British security officers. Now, what that tells you is the three... So what happens with foreign aid organizations is they have their aid staff and then they have security officers who sometimes are staff of the aid organization and sometimes they're contractors. In this case, they were contractors. They're almost always former, if not special forces military, but like Marine type. Mm-hmm. And that's that with these three. What that tells you is that deconfliction happened. So deconfliction, for those who don't know the term, is essentially where you tell the other side, the warring parties,
yep,
what you're doing. So NATO will do this with Russia a lot. They say, sure, we're running this exercise. It is an exercise. Expect to see this. They had deconflicted it. The Israelis confirmed it. And if it was one event, so if the three cars were traveling closely together,
mm-hmm,
you could say, it was an accident in targeting. It was an accident. But here's my question with it. Everybody's read about this, and you can see, you know, this is really, Biden was on the call with Netanyahu yesterday, pushing hard. They're going to open up. This has resulted in tipping the pressure that another border post will be opened. But over 200 aid workers have been killed to date, and almost all of them were Palestinian or Arab,
mm-hmm,
and none of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we start losing Westerners for an organization that's run by a celebrity chef.
Yeah.
And look, he does amazing work.
Absolutely.
But it's just telling around this narrative of the difference that this organization has made is arguably by being treated like other aid organizations are being treated, and then making the Western news' attention. It's incredible to watch. Heartbreaking for those involved, but of course, is a fraction of the deaths that have taken place in this conflict zone. Yeah. So yeah, it's wild. Staying with Israeli situation,
yeah, though,
you had a piece about
the ultra-Orthodox. So there have been, I think, particularly for Westerners maybe not keeping up with, and partly why we do tank radio. There are protests happening in Israel around ultra-Orthodox Jews who are willing to go to jail and not the army, or as they'll say, we will die rather than draft. So the High Court is conceptualizing and drafting, thinking about drafts for the Israeli military, and compulsory service is 3 years for men and 2 years for women.
And compulsory, so, not compensatory.
There we go. Compulsory. Yes. That's
you're not
word.
Compensated for it. It's compulsory. Well, yeah, a little bit.
So yeah, there have been court rulings that allow ultra-Orthodox students to have exemptions from draft, but now, given that manpower is waning and they're in the middle of a major conflict, they're looking at reinstating the draft. And so politically, there's this big push from both sides. On one side, it's a, hey, if we're getting drafted, why are the ultra-religious folks not getting drafted? On the other side, in parliament, they're having this really, really harsh conversation around how we shouldn't get drafted and that exemption should stand. And like, that may be the infighting that does the prime minister in, if he can't navigate it, or at least fracture some of the legislative body proceedings that are happening specifically around this thing, which feels small. And 13% of the Israeli population are ultra-Orthodox, or ultra-Orthodox. And so it's a thing that seems adjacent, kind of like Fiona Hill and planting rates,
yeah,
when Russia-Ukraine war kicked off. Like, the thing that we're not thinking about that may derail or very much be a factor in the actual conflict that we see.
The long-term factor that we don't pay attention to,
yeah,
but in this case is manpower. Yeah. This same week, Ukraine controversially reduced its age of conscription for exactly the same thing,
mm-hmm,
is getting manpower into the armed forces. As we move to cyber, remarkable news coming out this week that pretty much the whole internet was almost hacked. Just incredible story. Andreas Freund, a German national working in the United States for Microsoft, identified that a program on one of those, you know how the internet is built,
mm-hmm,
on, you know, nobody ever stepped back and designed the internet. It's built upon. And there's lots of these sort of sub programs that make the internet work, especially about connections between different nodes that are largely run by volunteers.
Yeah.
Who are just there coding, typically on Linux. And Andreas identified that a XZUtils, which is a sort of compression piece of software, was running microseconds more slowly than it should have done. Delved into it just a little bit, and it turned out that one of the volunteers had been essentially, run by a human intelligence officer who had, you know, volunteered to be part of this group. They'd become friendly over the internet. I mean, kind of like, it's just happened to British parliamentarians earlier this week, is they were dangled and then brought into a friendship and a digital friendship and relationship, and then gradually was trusted as a volunteer and embedded a line of code that they still haven't identified who it is yet, but it's presumed to be state-sponsored because it's so sophisticated, but would have given access to pretty much the whole internet as a backdoor.
And a master key via Linux operating system.
Yeah. Just tucked in. And this guy is being credited with essentially protecting the internet. And he, to his credit, has refused to have his photograph taken for interviews and is trying to keep a low profile. But I suspect his job is very secure at Microsoft right now. But just, we forget this. Like, we have this presumption of the internet being there and data. We were talking a few weeks ago about life after the AT&T outage for just a couple of hours in New York and not being able to function. These big debates around weapons in space and protecting space and GPS and connectivity. The threats of this integration are everywhere, including volunteers, you know, sitting and running a piece of code or updating a piece of code. But of course, the internet is built on open source, and that was always presented as, that's why Linux is the dominant software, is that it allows for this transparency for others to check and validate. It is not run, and unlike what people think, is not run by a government or any single government. It's not run by governments. It's run by a community of private sector and volunteers and nonprofits and all of those things, and it's incredibly vulnerable.
So I think my takeaway is Scott is advocating that everybody go off grid and become a prepper.
Battlestar Galactic, man. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's wild.
I'm always the thing that
I've told you this. You don't need to be a prepper. You need to know where your prepper lives.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But so interesting.
They can't run very fast.
The conversation around prepping, and we ought not go all the way into that. But there's one thing that's always stuck with me, and it's like the idea that you should just download all of the guidebooks to like a Kindle and have a solar charger for that. That would be the singular thing that one does, is like probably water tablets, but also just the world's information, not on the internet, downloaded to a device that you can charge via solar power.
So we have these jobs that allow us to go backstage constantly in all these different places and industries, and I think that leads to behaviors sometimes. I don't know if you do. I have paper maps. Actually, I'm buying new paper maps to go in my kid's car. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to teach you to read a map for this very reason.
There we go.
Anyway, but you don't need to be a prepper. Just know where your neighborhood prepper is and make sure they're out of shape.
Touché.
I mean, look, related to you know, threats in the space stuff, which we stay on Tank Radio, which, for a reminder for our hundreds of thousands of new listeners, is Tank Radio is where we try to bridge the gap between military and civilian, as very few of us in the civilian world really pay attention to what's going on in the military. Ukraine successfully flew an autonomous plane, like a regular propeller plane, like a Cessna, 1,300 kilometers into Russia, way east of Moscow, loaded with explosives, and flew it into the main production facility of the Shahed drones that the Russians are using, navigate its way through. But this was just if you're at an airport and you see those little propeller planes,
Cessna,
and you know what it reminded me? We were in the NASA hangar the week before, and there were two Cessnas in the back. Yeah. There were autonomous Cessnas, exactly that technology that are now being used. And just to be clear, NASA were using them for, sorry, before the conspiracy theorists get all caught up, they were using them for climate they were using them to study the climate change that's obviously not happening on the flat earth on which we live. I should just stop talking. But
he was in the hangar next to the one where they staged the moon landing, which is pretty cool. So, sorry. I couldn't help it.
All right. And then finally, finally, the British Army has decided in its wisdom that it's going to end a century-old ban and allow soldiers to grow beards.
Huh.
Now, I have a slight comeback to this.
Oh, here we go.
Because the Royal Air Force has allowed facial hair for a while.
Yeah.
But if you look at some of the imagery that comes out of the Royal Air Force, the pilots in particular have taken a growing those ridiculous like 1920s mustaches.
Yeah.
And they, yeah. So yeah. All for beards.
But, Royal but Air not Force, so much the mustache. So it's funny.
They're like hipsters in planes.
The SEALs notoriously throughout the special operations community get shit for being pretty boys, and it's because like they have the big bushy just like Navy SEAL mustaches, or everybody else is just like, I've been downrange and I grew out a beard. But no, the Air Force is having a conversation. The U.S. Air Force is having a conversation around this as well, as is the Army. But for some of the armed forces here stateside, requiring a shaving class before granting dispensation.
Now, you have to prove you know how to shave.
You know how to shave.
You're allowed to grow a beard.
Mitigate some of the adverse effects of shaving. Now, by the same token, and this piece is interesting. It is particularly so. A study found that beard waivers slow promotion, which overly affects black airmen, particularly. So the condition is known as, let me make sure I get this right, pseudo folliculitis barbae, or PFB, which causes razor burn. It's basically that that black hair, specifically as it gets curly, when you shave it, it gets like, it's almost like sharpening the arrows that we're not allowed to sharpen on the steps of the...
Okay.
And so as it curls and curls back into one's hair, like, or one back into one's face, so it comes out curly, it takes a turn and digs back in, and like you get razor burn that way.
Oh yeah.
So black
folks, it's
like folks,
an ingrown hair, really
exactly.
painful.
So you're more prone to get that, particularly interestingly enough, as a black man, you probably notice I keep my hair, like my facial hair, like I trim it with a razor. Or with a clippers.
Your beard doesn't get too long.
Yeah, but not with a razor. If I shave closer, I'll get really bad razor burn. Tristan Walker started, I'm forgetting the name of his company, if somebody can look up. Bevel. There we go. Bevel, it got picked up by Target and carried throughout Target's. Basically, the razors that are made often, not made for, but used by white folks to shave. You know how we're adding more and more razors? So this has like 5 razors. It gives you a closer shave. The best razor for me is a single blade razor, which are usually significantly cheaper. It doesn't give me as close a shave, which means I'm less prone to get razor burn as a function. And so high-end single-blade razors are now making a resurgence for black men who are trying to shave regularly. Tristan Walker, former venture capitalist.
He started a Walker company. Bevel was a flagship product with a single razor blade.
Yep.
An electric trimmer.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, we talk about inequity in product development, and like more razors or more blades is not conducive because a closer shave means I'm more apt to get razor burn. All of that to circle back to Tank Radio. Black men are often more affected by razor burn and more commonly request dispensation. But now, a military study has uncovered that black men are less likely to get promoted, or folks with facial hair in the military are less likely to be promoted, but it's often black men who are most likely to get dispensation to not shave and have facial hair, because having a shave is more, you're more likely to get razor burn. So it's this convoluted thing that is not about race, but is about the races that are more prone to have facial hair as a function of a condition that affects them because they shave.
It's interesting. I'm thinking back to, I've been party to conversations that you were in about whether state police departments should hire people with beards and the over-indexing of men with facial hair.
Yeah. And these findings, Journal of Military Medicine. So I have not read the study, is my caveat. I will, and am looking forward to it. But I am not surprised at that, and the idea that, oh, you're getting special dispensation not to do a thing adversely affecting the idea that one has to be. And to fly for the F-16 for the show, the Fighting Falcons, to be an honor guard, etc., you can't get dispensation. You have to have clean shaving. Oh. And so one might expect that, like, the high-profile teams where you have to have clean shaven, some black men can do that. But if you look at the numbers, you might be less able to apply because you can't. And it's a fascinating thing that I didn't expect to get into today. But here we are. Okay. What's next?
Well, I'm just going to say, if I'm invited to an event at the Ministry of Defense and one of those Royal Air Force pilots is there with one of those mustaches that thinks he looks like a Spitfire pilot from the 1940s, I'm going to remind him he looks like a Shoreditch hipster, and will he pour me a drink is what's going to happen. Flight Lieutenant. Yeah, okay.
Hey, speaking of shaving, this is the segue I'm going to use to get to Tools for Tools. Hey, so you were telling me about a book you want to write.
Oh, it was a book that was suggested that I write it, and I've got a couple of co-authors in mind. But so this isn't less of a tool; it's more of a question. I'm interested in what people think about this, if it'd be something that they think there's demand for. So the suggestion was, it was pointed out to me that I'm a pretty reasonable dad, but I had a great have a great dad. He's still around. Hi, Bob.
There we go.
And that actually not many people have that, where you're a solid father and you had a great dad, and that lots of people, for various reasons, didn't have a great dad. Mm. And the idea is a book about that, essentially, is if you had a solid dad, these are the things that they would have told you and taught you. Mm. And it's a series that is everything. And what it came about from was, well, I just hit upon it when I talked about having maps in the car, being able to read a map. I've got a list of things that the girls need to learn at different ages, mm-hmm. everything from how to navigate rapids, how to read a map, how to change a tire, how to fire a gun, or how to disarm a gun safely is the most important lesson for them. So it came from that, and just being around a few people who just weren't taught things by their parents. Now, obviously, you know, I'm going to get into all kinds of trouble because we're sort of doubling down on gender stereotypes, but things that were traditionally taught by men to their kids, and there's a lot of people who didn't have a strong father in their life, and so that's a question for people. Would that be of interest? That might be the next. You know, I don't have any hobbies. Mm. Like, would that be the next thing? Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple of dads in mind who I think could be, who actually they don't know yet, but Alan would be one of them. But Ron would be the other one.
Yeah.
You know, Ron, if you're listening, if people like this idea, you're going to be really busy.
You're an author now. Yeah. Congratulations, Ron. No, I called my uncle probably a month or two ago and just said thank you. The other day, and you know, I no commentary on my dad's dad, my dad's dadding, my father's fathering. He was just deployed often, and so
around.
You know, so some of the turns out ended up being father type figures, my mother being one of them in my life. Is just I called my uncle, he taught me how to tie a tie. I was up for a funeral in Philly, and Uncle Jeff was there. The other thing he taught me, we were going on a fishing trip. My cousin and I are the same age, his son, and he wouldn't let us. It was like cold as hell one morning. He wouldn't let us wear our jackets in the car. He's like, when you get out, you will have been acclimated to the warmth of this jacket, and you'll be colder when you're on the boat. So you're going to be slightly cold now to be more comfortable later. And it's like the lessons that stick. So I called him, and I was like, you taught me some core lessons in my life. And folks whose like dads maybe weren't great, but folks whose dads maybe just weren't around because they were being great elsewhere, we still needed some of those tools and guidance. And if that book helps, here's my vote for it. All right.
I mean, I wasn't asking you, but it was a lovely story anyway. Good for your uncle.
Fuck.
Also, can I point out that you spilled coffee on your shirt earlier, and then you told Perry you wanted to sit in that seat because you spilled coffee on that side of the shirt. And I don't know if you know this, but this is radio. They can't see. Let's move to yelling at clouds.
Nobody would have known I had spilled coffee on my shirt if you didn't say anything on radio.
Yeah. All right, quick yelling, because it's been a long episode.
Quick yelling. Richmond drivers suck, especially when it rains. It doesn't make any sense. We turn our hazards on when it's like drizzling here. It's the most ridiculous thing. You know what else we use our hazards for? Parallel parking. I don't know who decided that should be on the driving test, but every time somebody's starting to parallel park now, if we even teach parallel parking, I know people who don't come downtown Richmond from the West End because they don't know how to parallel park and it's scary. Good riddance to them. Anyway, but like the people who stop and put on their hazards rather than the turn signal indicating the side at which they're turning and the white lights that come on when you put your car in reverse, they've decided that I need to put on my hazard so people go around. And that says you're stopping because there's a fucking hazard, not that you're just stopping in the middle of the road. Keeping on that train, Uber drivers or delivery drivers who decide that because I have to deliver a thing, I guess I'll put my hazards on. That means I can stop my car wherever I want. I'd love if maybe you found some space to pull into a spot or just get out of the road rather than I'm going to stop here to put my hazards on and disrupt traffic, particularly on one-way streets that you can't get around them. It's infuriating. So Richmond drivers are shit. Everybody else is shit. Parallel parking with hazards is shit, and hazards in general are just generally shit. I think I'm good. What you got?
For those people who were enormously upset and offended by the fact that the transgender day of visibility was on the same day as Easter Sunday this year, I just want to reassure you that nobody designed it that way. It is always on the 1st of April, probably ironically, that the day of visibility for transgender people is on the 1st of April. And just a reminder that Easter moves. It is the first Sunday after the full moon that occurs on or after the spring equinox. If the full moon falls on a Sunday, then Easter is the next Sunday. It is never always on the 1st of April. So, sorry, how to explain
people
that?
People were mad about that, weren't they?
I think it was the 1st of April or the 31st of March, whatever it is, but Transgender Day of Visibility is fixed. It's Easter that moves. And if you don't like it, what's great about Christianity is you've got a backup option. If you don't like that Easter falls on a day of transgender recognition, jump to the Orthodox Church just for that year, and it'll be a few weeks later because they have a completely different system. If you don't like Christmas on the 25th,
be Orthodox that year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel like the clouds have been sufficiently yelled at. Hey, where are we going next? No, I mean,
to
like,
hell, where, I think is where I'm going.
I was going to say, where are you going to be next? And I think the answer might be the same.
I'm in New York, in and out as quickly as I can on Tuesday. And other than that, I'm homebound.
Good man. I love that we've both done very quick trips to each other's favorite cities. I got in and out of London. You get in and out of New York. And, you know, maybe we'd stay longer if we liked those places. I'm here all week, which is crazy. So if we owe you money, you can find us. Scott in New York, Ace in Richmond. And if you don't see us between then and now, we'll see you next time.
Perhaps.